Hey, welcome back to the Mañana No Mas podcast, everybody. Today, I am thrilled to bring to you a friend and kind of a coworker. His name is Will Middleton. I met him working at Lifter LMS, and I would love to just share Will with you guys for the next half hour or so. Will, tell me a little something about yourself.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I work with Lifter LMS, like Kurt said. I started out with online business like 6 years ago doing copywriting, and then I ended up copywriting for the LMS Cast podcast, the official podcast of Lifter LMS. And then from there, I learned WordPress. And for the last 5 years, I've gone really deep on learning WordPress, helping others learn WordPress. And that client services gig I was doing really ramped up. And I was creating YouTube videos and all kinds of stuff. And then Lifter LMS had an opening for a customer success position. I applied and I got in, and that's how I got to where I currently am.
Nice, nice. Now, when you say that you teach other people, you know, how to use WordPress, I think that that is like a huge understatement, man, because I've seen your work. I've seen your videos on YouTube. To be honest, I knew you from your YouTube videos before I knew you from you, right? Tell me about how that started. Like, how did you figure out like, hey, I've got a niche here. I can show people how to do something. And a lot of the cases, people don't even really know that they need to know it. And then once they see it, they're like, oh, I need to know that.
Totally. Yeah, I've always wanted to be a YouTuber kind of person. Growing up in my generation, being a YouTuber is like the thing everyone wants to do. It's like the new version of being a movie star. And so I had like Minecraft YouTube channels and all that kind of stuff when I was a kid. And so I had this understanding of how to edit and upload a video to YouTube. And I noticed in like Facebook groups I was in WordPress communities, I would see unanswered questions, or people would say, you know, how do I create like a setup where I have favorites on my WordPress post, where people can click favorite on blog posts and then posts can be ranked by favorite. Like, I saw all kinds of niche questions like that, and there wasn't an answer to them online. So I would turn on the camera, record a video about how to do it, and upload it to my channel. So pretty much responding to questions is how I built my YouTube channel.
That is cool. And so how old do you think you were when you started doing that?
When I first started, like when I was really young, or do you mean like started with the WordPress stuff?
Kind of give us like the history, the backdrop of that. I mean, I've got a 14-year-old in the house who thinks he's going to be a gamer for life, right? And puts up, you know, hey, he goes, hey, is it okay if I stream my game? Yeah, whatever, dude. You know, and it's not on Twitch. I guess he's sharing it on YouTube or something. But, you know, to your point, everyone thinks that they have some angle to get there. How old were you when you started, and kind of, when did you see glimpses of success?
Yeah, I guess I was probably about 12 years old when I started the like Minecraft YouTube kind of stuff. I would set up my iPod I had and just record the screen, and there was a terrible glare from the window and the blinds. The whole screen was pink and you couldn't even see what I was doing, and the audio was really bad. My commentary was no good. And, you know, so I put maybe like 4 videos in that YouTube channel, then tried again the next year. And I just kept coming back maybe every 6 or 12 months and trying to start something like that. And so my skills got better, where I learned how to use a screen recorder and not, you know, an iPod pointed at a computer screen. And my skills evolved until I was about, I think I was about 17 or 18 when I started the WordPress tutorials, just a couple of them. And then for 1 year, I think like 2 years ago, I had a New Year's resolution that I was going to do a video a day. And I did that for about 3 months. And that's what really kind of took the channel off.
Yeah. So with that little snippet there, because I was going to ask what, pardon me, I was going to ask what makes things successful. And, you know, you kind of already pre-answered, you know, consistency, right? So when you started going with daily content, did you notice a difference right away in kind of like, what do I call it? You know, penetration, you know, subscriptions, like how do you judge your own progress in that realm?
Yeah, I guess I did have a couple of videos that had like over 1,000 views, like a couple of tutorials when I had been doing a video maybe once every 3 months or just kind of randomly. When I did the video a day, that's when I really started leaning into answering questions. I would go in a spreadsheet and write down questions I see. And then when I'd have a day to record, I'd record 3 or 4 videos and then publish one a day. And then Chris from Lifter LMS would share those videos in the Facebook group. And that kind of really built my authority. And that's when I saw subscriptions kind of rise, when I was kind of showing up every week. I would have like a really good video. And then maybe the other 7 or 6 days would just kind of be like a 1 minute tutorial about how to find a setting.
Yeah. No, I think it's cool. I remember back when I first got started doing YouTube, I didn't have any visions of grandeur. Like, I didn't think I was going to be a YouTube celebrity because I'm an old dude, right? I'm just, to me, I was like, hey, I just got this idea. I'm going to put this out. And one video I put up, because I've got hundreds of videos in there. One video was how to take a pocket bike, you know, one of those really small motorcycles. And we did a 50cc overboard kit in one of these motorcycles. So it's basically just installing engine parts, right? So me and a friend took this motorcycle apart, put the different engine pieces in, and then we rode it and it went like 60 miles an hour when we were done working on it. Thing was a hoot. And we loaded that up. Well, over the course of like 6 months, I noticed it was getting a lot of traffic. And then like a year later, thousands of people had seen that video. And it blew my mind because I had what I thought was good content that wasn't getting any views. And then a stupid video about working on a little tiny motorcycle got, you know, thousands of views. And I've had a couple of those instances where, you know, I try to be consistent. I try to make content on a near daily basis and, you know, like this podcast and stuff like that. And then you put stuff out. Sometimes you get thousands of views. Other times it's hundreds. Other times it's, you know, six. You make something that you think is really good and six people watch it. And you're like, what was the magic missing on that one? And so I was wondering, do you kind of have a formula for yourself now to kind of keep yourself on a track to know when you're going to make something that's going to have some traction?
I do kind of see it when I see a question asked multiple times, I'll definitely make a video on it. But usually I just see the question asked once. And one thing I like to think about is a quote from Gary Vee with, it's not about how many views you have, it's about who the people viewing your videos are. And so when I notice like the CEO and people in these WordPress companies subscribing to my YouTube channel, I'm like, my quality of subscribers is really high. So like, I think it's a lot of quality over quantity, especially with like business stuff. Like what I do is freelance WordPress stuff. So I'm trying to get people to hire me to help them on their WordPress websites. And so I'd rather have, you know, like 500 to 1,000, like people who are exactly people who will get to hire me or rather than like 10,000 people who may just come for some entertaining content in my case.
Excellent. Well, you did it already. You already hit my next segue, and that was this freelance thing. Knowing that you're associated with Lifter, right, but you still do your own thing. What does that look like for you? Like, do you just focus on learning and membership sites, or are you open to all kinds of WordPress work? Like, what? And it doesn't even have to be WordPress, right? So I'm like, what is it that you really like? Tell us who, what your company is, what you freelance under, and kind of what your perfect customer is.
Sure. So my origin with being on the Lifter LMS Experts page was my first like freelance stuff where you just kind of put up a website where people can fill out a contact form and reach out to you. I was doing content entry work and I got some jobs like that. And so I kind of created this WP course guide. WPCourseGuide.com is what I'm currently under. And it's focused on WordPress and courses specifically. I can build all kinds of websites with WordPress, and I have done a lot of other kinds of websites, but it seems like the riches are in the niches, and people who are too generalized can have sometimes trouble getting traction. So that's why I focus really specifically on course and membership websites, but really any kind of website in WordPress I can make. And like, you know, with building websites too, is that course sites are some of the most complicated ones, because not only do you have e-commerce as a component, you have to deal with caching due to logins. People are logging in, people have progress, people are taking quizzes. There's all kinds of themes and conflicts. So they're really complicated websites. So I feel like if you can make a course website, you can make almost any kind of website.
I kind of agree with you a little bit on that. And then I think about, I'm trying not to put my words in your mouth, right? Because we both kind of do a little bit of the same thing. But when you're working on membership and learning sites for people or course sites, I get bamboozled. I'm not gonna say bamboozled. I don't mind writing curriculum, writing copy. I'm really good at taking a complex issue and breaking it down into learning chunks, right? And so I think I attract customers that need that work. For instance, you know, there was a marine company that I'd been working with the last couple of years, and it was, we're gonna build service writer, service manager training, and then I had to write the course and outline for them and build the course. What snafus or problems or obstacles do you run into with customers that they think they're going to hire you to make a course website, and then you realize they don't have a course? Like they have an idea, but they don't have content.
Yeah, I guess I'm actually, that's a great point you bring up about the different hats course creators wear that Chris talks about a lot. You know, there's like for a successful course site, you need technology, you need community building, you need to be an entrepreneur. You need to, there's two more. You need to be an expert. And then man, what's the fifth one? Entrepreneur, community building, technologist, entrepreneur. I just made a summit about this. I should know what the fifth one is. Instructional designer. That's it. So you're talking about kind of that instructional design work. And what I do is a lot of technologist kind of work. So like the really nitty gritty, how do we create this setup kind of work? I don't do a whole lot of work with instructional design. Mostly I'll refer someone to someone else like Jenny Jacobs, who in our community offers those instructional design services. So at this point in time, I just defer to people who know more than I do. And I really focus on the technology aspect.
Yeah. And I know you've been a godsend to me in that regard because you helped me on a project. I consider myself more of a, I'm more of a strategist. Like I'm more of a project manager strategist. I go to a customer, I do a needs assessment and I'm like, you got a big idea, but you don't have any of the building blocks to assemble the idea. Right. And so I go, so, you know, we got to build like the five hats to me is like, we need these blocks here, these blocks here, these blocks here, this. And so I start to put that project together and then prioritize it and build it. Right. But I usually end up doing a lot of the content development or the instructional design. When you run into someone that has all their stuff together, right? Like, tell me how good it feels when someone says, hey, I think I need a website. And then you do a needs assessment or a first call with them. And it's like, they have their content. That things are written, they have their graphics, they know what their logo is, they know what color palette they want to use, and they've already written the content for like the About Us page. And you're like, oh my God, it's all here.
Yeah, I guess I'm pretty enthusiastic with those kind of projects because they're pretty clear cut. The only piece it seems like they're missing is technology. And of course, I don't, you know, if they've never built a course before or validated their specific business here, maybe they might struggle with the expertise or community building. But from my position, that makes my job a lot easier. One thing that we've both seen in the client space is when people kind of half have their content together. So then they put it on the website and then they want to change something where like maybe they want to add a new product to the website or redesign the courses or have a new design layout or change themes after having entered their content. And so it's real nice, like you're saying, when they have everything laid out before they approach the technology piece.
Yeah, when they have a nice plan. Having a good plan is awesome. So when you have a plan, and again, we're talking about complicated websites. Let's say it's a bigger project, you know, multiple courses, different membership streams coming in, all that stuff. When you are working with your clients, how do you have that discussion about like phases? I've heard you mention phases with clients before. And how do you approach that? Like some people think, and we know this, right? We know that there's people that think they have to have the whole project done and perfect and buttoned up before they publish the site. And then there's other people that are like, you know, you give them a copy of Lifter LMS and 2 days later, they got a course out, right? And you're like, well, it's a little skeleton, but it's working, right? How do you discuss or how do you approach the topic of phases with customers and then know that you're going to be with that customer for a relationship rather than a transaction?
Yeah, I guess if some customers are looking for different things. So if they already know where they're going, they just need someone to implement it. I'm willing to do that. But with customers who are, you know, just starting their course platform, maybe they don't have a community built around their product already. Maybe they haven't made 10 sales of their course already. I like to think about it in a framework of like 0 to 10 enrollments. Like how many enrollments do you have on your website? Do you have 0 to 10, 10 to 100, 100 to 1,000? Or are you above 1,000? So thinking about it in those phases really helps me figure out what to recommend for technology products to a client. If you have 0 enrollments or less than 10, you're going to want to keep it simple as possible, because you might not necessarily know what the market wants or what your customers want. And so focusing on getting those 10 enrollments and keeping it lightweight, putting a lot of offers out there is really important for that 0 to 10 phase. From 10 to 100, you might have some feedback from customers and some better ideas and know about Facebook groups you're going to advertise in. So maybe you'd want to implement a CRM tool like Groundhog or ActiveCampaign and start collecting people's emails. But when you don't even have 10 enrollments, you don't really need to get into that CRM stuff yet. And then of course, 100 to 1,000, you know, we can get more specific because you have a lot of feedback and a lot of data to work with.
Yeah. It's, I don't know how you feel about it, but I, you know, I've been doing what you're doing a lot less than you have. I hope I said that right. But you have more experience working in this field than I do, especially with other customers. And so I come from an area where I was building training sites for corporations, you know, for Suzuki, Ducati, things like that, like these big projects. And now that I'm doing freelance private work and build my own training company, I look at, you talk to somebody, you're doing that discovery call, that needs assessment. And I'm like, well, do you have a community yet? And most of the times it's no, but other times I'm shocked when someone will be like, well, yeah, right now we have, 30,000 users and we need to, migrate them to the new project. Sometimes I'm like, gulp, that's a lot. 30,000 people to me, that's a lot of people to move around. Do you have a comfort level with audience size or, moving things around? Is there a number that kind of makes you gulp?
I would say, like you said, those larger projects, if someone were to come with 30,000 users, that is a large list. It really kind of changes my approach. With that many users, we're going to take things a lot more slowly. We're going to take a lot more considerations for maybe we'd implement something like WP Fusion, where we can take all those 30,000 people and then give them tags to automatically fill in their progress, and some more advanced stuff like that. So I don't think I've dealt with a site that has more than 100,000 users, but it really just changes the approach. It's a lot easier to keep it scrappy when we have less than 500 users, but yeah. At some of those higher levels, we just need to take a step back and figure out what the plan is going to be.
I'm almost like you in terms of scrappy, right? Like I almost prefer scrappy. Yeah. Like it's small, to your point, keep things simple, let things grow, have that feeling of accomplishment when something takes hold and works, and you're like, okay, it's working. When I look at projects that have like a ton of people in them, it's bizarrely awkward to me because most of those customers, when I talk to them, they start phrases with like, all you have to do is, right? They're like, well, all you got to do is migrate that over. All you got to do is export that people list and import. All you got to do is, and they make it sound like it's 5 minutes. And it's like, no, like that sounds really logical the way that you presented that, but that I know that that's not the way that that's going to work. Right. I know I'm going to take that list. I'm going to have to, map all the fields, make sure that it works, maybe build a WP Fusion, thing to make things category or funnel out or add tags or whatever. And, I'm learning more and more, or I should say maybe the trend is becoming more and more that people don't want these products out of the box anymore. Like when I first got Lifter LMS and plugged it in the first time and used it, I took the plugin, loaded it, used it. Now it seems like everybody I talk to says, oh, that's great, but I want this over here and I want that over there. And I want this word to say this instead of this. And this has to be blue and this has to be purple. And I'm going, where are these needs and requirements coming from? Because we used to just plug stuff in and say, go.
Yeah, totally. It's interesting with clients. At the end of the day, I'll be like, if that's what you want to do, we can spend 30 minutes to get the CSS written to make that happen or make this text larger. It's just, is that going to make or break your project? Is that going to be the difference between your project being successful and your project not being successful? I don't think that's thought about a lot, especially with sites that don't currently have customers. Because if you're rolling in money and you want to reinvest that money into the design, I'm happy to get paid to upgrade that design. But if we're validating a course, if the goal is truly to be successful, some of those more vanity features usually can take a backseat until we're at about 100 enrollments.
Yeah, I love hearing you say that because it sounds so much better when it's not coming out of my own face. constantly I'll be asking a client, I'll be like, well, what's your current audience for this? Or what's your current what's your projected penetration over 6 months to a year? Or, you know, I'm trying to get to what, so that when we have subsequent conversations, then I can say, look, you're really only projecting 50 active users a month on this thing. You know, other learning products that I had worked with were all based on active users per month, right? Cause it was all based on a licensing, you know, kind of a scheme. I don't know how else to say it. Cause now that I've worked with Lifter, I'm like, why would anyone pay that anymore? But we used to have conversations about like, okay, well, we've got 2,500 users, but it's only 147 active users per month, right? And so then our licensing would be this much, this much, this much. And then we would make decisions based on that active user count. So when I switched over to using Lifter and WordPress tools, that number didn't really matter anymore to the budget, right? It didn't affect the dollars, but I think it still affects the decisions of the design and the extra work that goes in, because it's like, you've only got 50 active users a month coming in here, right? And we're like, that comes up with hosting a lot. People want this grandiose hosting plan. And I'm like, I don't know that you need to spend $5,000 a year on hosting for this project, because you don't have enough people. You could put this on Bluehost and it'll live there. Like there's a, I don't know. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think it has a lot more to do with the business than the website itself. Like I view the website as a tool for the business, but it's not necessarily the business itself. Like we, you know, me and Kurt, if you want to hire me and Kurt, we can create you a copy of Amazon plus courses. So you can have an exact copy of how the Amazon.com website works, but it also has online courses. So it's like Udemy plus Amazon. But the positioning of the business and having the customers is really what's going to make the business work. So just because you have a website that can do some really fancy stuff, the same fancy stuff as industry leaders, it's really the business positioning that's going to make or break whether your project works or not. And I think a lot of people don't view a website as a tool. They view it as the business. So like if the business isn't working and they're thinking about the website as the business, maybe buying another WooCommerce add-on and stapling it on the website might make it work. But that wasn't the problem in the first place, because the business is not the website. The business is just a tool. You know, like my website is pretty much just a business card and a way to get in touch with me. The real essential parts of my business is getting on Zoom with people and helping them with their website. So really the business for me is getting on Zoom with people. Even though my website is a tool that just kind of helps people figure out how they can work with me, but the website itself is not the key player.
You know, I think you really nailed a really pretty big topic right there. And it sounded like something easy, but it's a good topic. I personally, I suffer because I have the completely wrong website for what it is that I offer, what I do, right? And I've talked to Chris, I've talked to other industry leaders, and they'll look at my site and they'll ask me, they'll go, well, dude, what is it that you actually sell, right? And that's because I had Manana No Mas as a company that did like digital marketing and all kinds of cool stuff in Albuquerque, right? And then I was a public speaker and had that going. Well, when I went to corporate employment, when Ducati hired me away from myself, I didn't turn off Manana No Mas. So it turned into kind of a blog, right? So it had like really cool travel stuff about, you know, my trips to Italy and trips to Europe and working with Ducati at the factory and all these things that people found interesting. And so I kept it up and kept it up and kept it up. So now I've got, you know, 10 years of content in this website, and the pride, the inner part of me is like, well, I don't want to delete that or turn that off. Right. So then I'm like, well, I'm going to be a trainer and a public speaker. I'm John Maxwell certified. So I make an academy, make a subdomain. And I thought, okay, so now I have a content site that's entertaining with lots of content, and it shows that I'm smart and I'm interesting. And then I have this academy site, which is kind of like a portfolio that shows that I can make a training website, but it also has content. So if people want to do like self-improvement or goal setting or something, it's in there. I can sell the courses too. But the way that it presented, I mean, for a year and a half, 2 years, I was trying to push that. And you could tell people, you'd look at the traffic, you'd look at the bounce rates, you'd look at the hotspots on the site. And I'm like, it ain't working. Like as cool as I think it is, it ain't communicating. And to your point, you're like, I have a website with a form on it and people can get in touch with me and hire me to make websites. Yeah. Like, that's all you need.
For sure. Yeah. And I think like a lot of people do put the website first when it doesn't necessarily need to come first. For example, if you're trying to start a freelance business, the best thing to do might be to get on Upwork and to list yourself on maybe clarity.fm and a couple of those websites where people go looking for services, places like Fiverr. And then if you get a couple of jobs on there and you realize, hey, people are buying this service, then you might want to use the profit you made from those places to invest in your own website. If you're making, you know, 10 bucks a month and you can afford a domain and a website, now you've got that validation and you didn't even have to pay to get that validation. You just listed yourself on those places, got a couple of jobs, and now have the money to reinvest into the website. And that really gives you the mentality of thinking of a business, the business first rather than the website first. I don't know how many freelancers you have as the audience for this podcast, but that's something I really realized is a great tip for starting freelancers.
I love the way you said it. I don't know who you stole it from. And if you made it up, you need to patent it, dude. But it's like the website's the tool. It's not the business. And that's 100% right. You know, the community, the networking, the conversations that people have, the relationships they build, that's the company. That's the business, right? And then the website's really just a tool. I look at it like a lot of the sites and projects I have are just kind of the glue that brings those conversations into a place. You know, this is what we talked about. Check out this link, right? I guess it's kind of like what we do with Lifter, right? Someone asked me a question about something, I'll answer the question and I'll say, here's a resource to back that up, right? So the site's the tool. That's perfect. So dude, tell me, what do you do when you're not scouting for customers or working on a keyboard?
Mostly just working on a keyboard. I have random hobbies and things I do. Like Kurt, I have a bunch of projects and am sort of like the entrepreneurial type of person. I might go and try and make like a card game or something, just kind of random projects. And that's something I think a lot of people don't see with success in the online space, is that I have like a 10% or maybe an 8% success rate with my businesses. Like most people don't see all the failures. They just see like, hey, he's successful with his freelance practice and got some good courses. But like, I've failed a lot along the way. And that's a lot of what I do when I'm not working with Lifter, is just doing other projects that are going to fill up that 90% of projects that don't work for me.
I love it. Failing forward, dude, there is nothing wrong with failing forward. It's an awesome way to grow. So are you the kind of guy that hangs out at like the comic book store with the board games in the back and with the fellas inventing games or playing Dungeons and Dragons and stuff?
Somewhat. I like Magic the Gathering, but it's pretty much a similar kind of store. I'm not as like imaginative into like Dungeons and Dragons. That's kind of like a game totally of the imagination. I like how Magic has kind of elements of chess and there is kind of some definitive stuff in there. But yeah, I do hang out at places like that for sure.
That's fun. I've got a neighbor friend right around the corner, and him and his kids, I mean, if you don't see the car in the driveway, chances are they're hanging out with some nerds playing some board games.
Yeah.
So, and it's a good thing. He loves it. He absolutely loves it. You're up in the snow country, right? Minnesota.
I am. Yeah.
All right. So that's why we look like two different colors on the same screen. Look at that. I'm out in Southern California and I'm German. I shouldn't be this dark. And you are pale, man. You are like some milk in there. Look at that. How much snow you got right now?
We have about 2 feet of snow. I had to shovel it yesterday. I guess I might be able to turn my monitor a little bit. You might be able to see.
Don't drop your computer.
Not my computer. I have a desktop now, so it's harder for me, but you can kind of see out there.
That is phenomenal.
The path to the mailbox. You got about 2 feet of snow on the sides there now. Yeah, it's -5 today with a low of -34. So hopefully it doesn't get down to that.
That's phenomenal. Dude, it is. It's going to be 70 today. It's sunny. I left the door open. I figured I'd let Clark, the dog across the street, be the guest star on the podcast today and let him bark from across the street. It's just unbelievably nice out. I'll be working on my camper van later and getting that thing ready for the road. It's I'm so looking forward to doing some traveling. When your snow melts, maybe I'll come park in front of your house for a day or two.
For sure. Yeah. I got plenty of space. If you want to drive up here on your way to Canada to get a new license.
On my way to Canada. Oh, I can't wait to get back to Canada. I love it up there. And the mountain biking is amazing. So that'd be cool. So I don't want to put you on the spot or embarrass you or anything, but there's a part of you that I find fascinating. And I know that Chris has mentioned it publicly before, so hopefully I won't get in trouble, but this whole Boy Scout thing where you went to Eagle Scout in a year, I think that's pretty tremendous, dude. And that's, and I wanted to kind of bring that out. Okay. How, what was the motivation for that? Like, besides like, I was in the Scouts and I wanted to get it. Like, yeah, were you like 17 and 2 months old and went, oh crap, I got to get this done by my next birthday?
No, it actually, and it was, it's like two and a half years. It was kind of almost 3 years. I got it like before I was four, while I was 14, I was actually like just a couple of months before my 15th birthday, but it was kind of like a vanity thing. Try to get it when you're 14. And so that was about 2.5 years in the Scouts for me. And my mom, who, you know, has just really pushes, as a kid, really pushed me to get achievements. Like I have a first degree black belt I got when I was 9, which was a result of 4 years of like everyday karate. It was really intense. And the same thing with Boy Scouts. She's like, you know how cool it would be if you got to Eagle Scout by age 14. And so all you have to do is basically double homework.
All you got to do is.
Yeah, all it's just basically like double homework every day from school. You know, you have your school homework and then you get into the Boy Scouts afterwards. If you have no social life in middle school, you can knock it out before high school. And so, yeah, that was kind of the deal. And that was my first online course I made with Lifter LMS, was how the fast track to Eagle, just basically how I got to Eagle Scout by buckling down and some of the strategies of just looking ahead in the book. You know, you can do first class tenderfoot and second class at the same time. So you should be looking at all three of those ranks with the requirements and going through them as if it's one big rank. And just getting some merit badges earlier in your scouting experience in order to not have to do a bunch of merit badges late, and just some strategies like that. And that course, I didn't do a lot of the community building for that course. So it kind of fell flat. I've had some sales over the last few years, but that was one of my failures. It's really just kind of a fire that's continuing to burn in the background. But it was kind of like a, you know, I thought it would take off and go somewhere, but that was a failure where I learned how to use Lifter and that kind of springboarded me into something else. But yeah, that's kind of Boy Scouts for me.
The community thing to me is super, super interesting. Like, to your point, you made a course on how to, you know, kill it being a Boy Scout. And it's not like there's not a lot of Boy Scouts out there. There's a ton of them. My son just joined the Scouts, right? He made it the Scout. He's got the little kerchief, right? So there's a ton of them. So I can see how you would make that course and you would be like, I'm gonna be raking in the dollars, man. I don't even need a job. I'm gonna make board games for the rest of my life in my mom's basement. I don't know what you would think, right? But you'd be like, this is going to be awesome. And then you publish it and it's like crickets. Yeah. You know, I've got a very similar failure and I'm still working it. So it's not technically a failure yet. I'm not giving up, but like my power sports training company, right? I have a corporate background in power sports. I am the genius when it comes to teaching service departments how to increase their service business at a motorcycle dealership. And so I put it all online. I made online courses. I made a training program. I offer monthly coaching. To me, I'm like, I'm going to have to beat them off with a stick. I don't know how I'm going to take care of all these people that are going to want this service. This is going to be amazing. And then I launch it and it's crickets. And it's like trying to attract people to something, even if it's something that they need, even if it's something the market is screaming for, it's still difficult to get people to see it, to be attracted to it, and to have buy-in. What do you think are some secrets to that?
I think I took the 0 to 10 enroll summit from Lifter LMS recently. I actually made that, but I watched the content again recently, and Melissa Love had a great point about this, and that is that the community should also come before the course. Because if you're offering services or giving out tips or making YouTube videos before you make your course, you're going to get your finger on the pulse before having to invest all that time into making the course. And so if you put the community before, you're going to see questions the community asks. You're going to have a group of people who are ready to buy your course when you release it. And building the course before having the community is kind of like putting the cart before the horse. Sometimes it can work, but you're more likely to be successful if you want to put that community part first. And I think that was a great tip from her, is really focusing on the community.
Yeah, I got to agree. In fact, I've adopted that modality, I guess is a good word, but I've adopted that modality with the new book that I'm publishing, right? It's like, pardon me, getting over COVID. I swear I'm going to be healthy in a week. I published a book before, and luckily it did sell. Like, it sold to its target audience. It wasn't like a bestseller out of the gate, but the target audience bought it. And that's how I got into corporate training, is through the sale of that book. So I got another book that's coming out, but instead of like releasing the book and publishing it and buying 10,000 copies and putting boxes in my garage, I'm like, no, I got to start hitting like a public speaking tour. I got to do some talks on leadership, work with some youth events, and then try and build that message up, build that community up, so that, you know, when the book finally does officially release, there's going to be 1500, 2000 people that are going like, yeah, I'd read his book. Right. Because it's so, so hard. And it's demoralizing when you put your heart and soul into making something and then you get that crickets thing. Yeah. You know, it's when you can step back and build the community first, like what you described, and then have that fulfillment as you release stuff and have people be excited about it. That's a whole lot more fun than seeing crickets.
Totally. Totally. And that's something I realized with some of my client work and why some of my client sites weren't successful. And also my sites is I realized what I was actually doing is putting myself, I was building a product because I wanted to build a product. I wasn't building a product because people needed that. And so once I started answering questions that I saw directly, like I would directly answer them and copy and paste their question into the title of my video, that's when I started to really get traction. And that's a really big thing I learned. And I'm still putting out products just because I want to put out products, but I understand that passion projects have a lower likelihood of being successful. Then filling a need. Like, it's kind of like that, the Ikigai framework that Chris has talked about. And I'm not sure if you've shared that with your audience before, but just, it's kind of an intersection between the things you like to do and the things the market needs. And so it's totally fine to put out projects because you want to put out projects. But it's just important to kind of have that understanding that it might not work because nobody asks the question, but it's totally fine to put it out there. Because, you know, maybe you'll become a million subscriber YouTube channel with this one business. And then, you know, some angel investor will see your portfolio site, and then one of your other projects will take off. But
yeah. Yeah. You know, it's unique. I just had the phone ring yesterday with an opportunity that was not anything like what my portfolio site displays. Right. But it's like someone went, hey, I can see from your LinkedIn, from your other social media channels, and from the courses that you host, that you would be a really good fit for A, B, and C. Would you be interested? And I was like, well, that was unique. Right. But it's like, it's just really, when you get into this gig economy of doing freelance work or contract work, it's really interesting what kind of opportunities you can get into.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, listen, man, I want to value your time. What's a great way for people are going to watch this and they're going to say, I can't stand Kurt. I'd rather work with a guy like Will anyway. So how can people best reach you, or how do you prefer to be contacted?
Yeah. Look me up at wpcourseguide.com. You could find me at Will Middleton if you type me into Google, and also willmiddleton.net. is my portfolio website. If you want to scroll through all my failures, I have a page on there of all my projects. I got the red ones highlighted and the couple that have worked highlighted in green. And so that's a great perspective on who I am and what my journeys look like. But wpcourseguide.com and willmiddleton.net are my places.
Totally, totally cool. And then, of course, we can always find you on YouTube, right? Just search for Will Middleton, and your tutorials will pop up there.
For sure.
Definitely. Nice. How many you got now? How many videos? 1,200?
Videos. I haven't counted in a while. I could probably hop over to YouTube real quick and see. I think it shows me that. Let me look here. I guess I'm playing one of my videos. 165 total.
Nice. Nice. All right, man. Well, folks, this has been Will Middleton. I hope you've enjoyed our time with him today. If you need help on a membership or a learning website and you can't stand me, give Will a call. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Good. That was a great interview.
Dude, my stomach was cramping the entire time you were talking.
Oh, from the vitamins?
I am so sick.